programming. Without further ado, our first guest this morning is Robert Pearson, former ambassador from the United States and a current non-resident scholar at the Middle East Institute. His focus is on Turkey, especially with an emphasis on U.S.-Turkey relations and other areas of interest regarding Turkey's relations with the EU, Russia, the Middle East, and Central and East Asia. This is his second time on the program. Now, I believe we also should mention that he was the U.S. ambassador to Turkey from 2000 to 2003 and was director general of the U.S. Foreign Service from 2003 to 2006. Ambassador Pearson, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Glad to be with you.
What is Erdogan doing this week? That's the question that I'm always asking myself on Wednesdays in the middle of the week, because I'm not sure what segment of our program we're going to be talking about his different involvements in Russia, in Syria, in Libya, in Malta, in Cyprus, in the Eastern Mediterranean. If you can just give us a concise, you know, 2 or 3 minute overview, what has the president of Turkey been putting his fingers into which pies in the last few weeks?
Well, Turkey has, and he has, imperial ambitions, and all that you're seeing is a manifestation of that. In Libya, the government of national accord in Tripoli is now driving east along fields that have been out of their control for years, and that is a dramatic new change in Libya. In Syria, of course, the Turks are hanging on to territory that is in northwestern Syria, but they cannot have they don't have the power to actually defeat Assad's forces, and they can't really leave. So, in general, Turkey has ambitions, but it hasn't been very successful. And Mr. Erdogan, in recent weeks and months, has tried a high-stakes gamble in Libya to increase Turkish prestige and at the same time lay claim to a great deal of the Eastern Mediterranean economic resources that Greece and Israel and Cyprus and Egypt also claim. So he is aggressively working politically and militarily to try to increase the power and influence of Turkey in the global game.
Now, you've written recently that President Erdogan is using nationalism as a band-aid to quell economic discontent at home. Is his intervention in Libya and trying to start fires in other areas of the Eastern Mediterranean a popular policy in Turkey?
Yes and no. It's popular in the sense that Turks are nationalist and now, and they are very proud of the prestige of their country and its power outside its borders. But they are tired, a great number of Turks, of the wars, the risk in Libya, the risk in Syria, campaign against the Kurds, and that costs money. And if you are involved in a war, you have to win or you lose national prestige. So I would say it's a mixed bag, frankly, and more Turks are skeptical than they were before, but there's still a lot of support for a kind of grand Turkey, a new Turkey, as Erdogan calls it, playing a big role in the Middle East and in the world.
Now, as you know, the Turkish-backed government of national accord in Libya has, to my surprise actually, made major gains against their rival, the Libyan National Army, under Khalid al-Haftar. Now, this is sort of puzzling to someone like me and many other outside observers, because the LNA has a more powerful roster of backers, Russia, Egypt, the UAE, now against Turkey and Qatar. How has Turkey pulled this off?
Well, it's very interesting. The Turks sent in, I think, December or January, a large number of soldiers. They're actually Syrian mercenaries that the Turks, through donors, paid to go there. And the Turks are very good at drone technology. And so Haftar was pushing to capture Tripoli in an offensive he announced in April, but he really didn't have the capability to do that. He went too far. And the Turks, by helping the government of national accord strike back, has captured an air base, now another important city, and they have essentially demolished Haftar's attempts to gain national power by conquering the government in Tripoli.
Do you expect these gains to last?
Well, this is the game. If the GNA goes too far east, it will directly threaten the oil fields in eastern Libya, and that would certainly draw a reaction from the backers of General Haftar, including the Russians. So you have a game in Libya in which, at one level, it's a great power game. Turkey, Russia, Europe, the United States. And at another level, it's an ideological game because Egypt, UAE back the opposition to the Muslim Brotherhood, and Qatar, a strong ally of the government in Tripoli, and Turkey are proponents of the Muslim Brotherhood theology. So it's a Middle Eastern conflict over ideology at one level and a great power conflict over resources at another.
Now, this is the second time that Turkey is squaring off either directly or indirectly against a Russian-backed opponent. Is this a forecast for what's inevitably going to happen in Lebanon, in Israel, in the Palestinian territory, Jordan, Egypt, other African states and statelets, with Turkey and Russia facing off for influence? I mean, how has this happened where we have the Europeans and the Americans largely sidelined, even though this has been their traditional area of influence?
That's a very good question. The Turks finally have realized the Russians are going to do nothing for them in Syria, and the Russian engineered attack on a Turkish convoy back in the spring was the final straw to show Ankara that the Russians didn't care enough about Turkey to give them any concessions in Syria. So that's what started this combination of cooperation and confrontation between those two countries, and it's now extended to Libya. I wouldn't predict that it is going to now spread like water across Africa and other places, because frankly, the Russians would be delighted to have a strategic base in Libya and not have to worry about anything else for a while. And the Turks would be very happy to be a winner in Libya and not have to worry about anything else for a while, because the Turks traditionally have not been able to be very successful in their foreign policy forays. So, but this actually gives the U.S. a great opportunity. If Turkey and Russia now are going to be contesting with each other on certain issues, it gives an opportunity for the Americans to try to work with the Turks to use that relationship against the Russians, and in doing so, perhaps modestly improve Turkish-American relations.
Okay, now on the opposite side, away from conflict and looking a little bit closer to the domestic Turkish picture, in another recent article, you offered a very grim prognosis about the economy in Turkey, stating that the value of the lira has plummeted to such a new low despite the Turkish Central Bank's dramatic depletion of hard currency reserves attempting to prop it up. Now, what's causing this economic crisis beyond the global recession, if anything?
Well, the global recession has had a lot to do with it, and the current pandemic impact has had a lot to do with it. But inflation is again rising in Turkey. Unemployment among young people is probably 25 or 30% under the age of 25. And the country badly needs structural reform to improve its productive capability. Mr. Erdogan refuses to take those steps because he controls so much of the economy. There's a great deal of corruption, and he can't afford politically to allow somebody else to straighten out his economy. So that's where my comment about Band-Aids comes in. He keeps twiddling with interest rates. He keeps managing to get a little extra money from Qatar. He gets a little extra money from here and there. But that's why the economy is in such difficulty, and it's likely to get worse. The Turks have a total of over $300 billion in dollar-denominated debt, which the government is either obligated to guarantee or to pay for services, along with a huge debt owed by Turkish business people. I think $80 billion have to be refinanced this year, so they're in trouble.
Now, one of the news stories that we started off the top of the broadcast was about Turkey's inclusion into the Euroclear, system, one of two security clearinghouses in the Eurozone. Will Europe or any other country offer Turkey a lifeline or a bailout to help with their problems?
I doubt it. They strategically are really at odds with Turkey, and much of that is Turkey's fault because of its aggressive attitude towards the European Union. And so I think that they will try not to let Turkey fail. So if it comes to that, I'm sure they'll put up some money to help Turkey keep going, but they're not about to be the guardian angel for the Turkish economy.
Now, what kind of opposition is Erdogan facing domestically in the wake of this economic crisis? Is he starting to feel pressure from within his own party or an increased vocal opposition that may be unified with their ability to cause him some trouble at the ballot box? And that's, of course, with the footnote, not taking into account any electoral manipulation.
Yes. I think you have to start in all the domestic discussion with the fact that Mr. Erdogan is a supremely effective politician, tactically and strategically inside Turkey, and he has now dominated the Turkish political landscape for two decades with a pretty good chance of having it last for at least three more years and perhaps even longer. So there is a lot of opposition. There are a lot of fragmented mosaic groups, but none of them is organized in the way that his own party is. He has two people from his own party who have split. It's clear they are a threat, but how much is not clear. The opposition has elected a mayor of Istanbul, the major source of the economy in Turkey and a great source of patronage and funds for political campaigns, but they don't have a national program as such. So I would say it's a wheel and spokes problem. Mr. Erdogan is the guy at the hub, and the opposition are out on the periphery, and so he plays each of them off against the other. But he does have significant weaknesses, and those continue to show up in the economy and in the political scene.
Has Erdogan groomed a successor? Does he have someone who's an heir apparent?
No, like all authoritarian figures everywhere in the world and throughout all time, these guys never prepare a successor. And so neither has Mr. Erdogan. In fact, he has made it possible over the last 4 or 5 years to eliminate anyone who could possibly be a competitor to him within his own party. That's one of the reasons why two former leaders in his party have broken away to try to form their own parties.
What about his son-in-law?
His son-in-law is his son-in-law, and he has no political experience whatsoever, and he is basically an agent for Mr. Erdogan's policies. So he has no base of popularity and no base for admiration or support in the country. So he only wields power because Mr. Erdogan is his father-in-law.
Right, and unlike Erdogan, who has his 30-year story, starting off as being active in football, soccer, then being the mayor of Istanbul, being jailed, going out, his rise to power in the early aughts. There's not many other people who have a narrative like Mr. Erdogan, nor the deep relationships that he's formed over the last 20 to 30 years in politics. Nor is there anyone else like Fethullah Gulen, who was his original political partner. Is there any other, I don't want to call them apolitical figure, but any other figures in Turkey besides Erdogan or members of the opposition who are casting a shadow over his rule? Is there anyone capable of organizing or fomenting opposition to him that may be just enough to push the AKP off the edge?
One of his former party members and a founder of the party is named Babacan. In Turkey, they call him Bebecan, which means baby face, because he looks a lot younger than he is. But he is running on a campaign of liberal democracy, restoring freedoms, fixing the economy, and he is smart enough to run a country, and he has a lot of financial experience. So he could become a source for real opposition and replacement of Mr. Erdogan, but with the elections now 3 years away, it's far too early to imagine what his track of success might be.
Now, it's not just his problems that he has with Russia or his domestic problems, but for the first time, Greece, Cyprus, and Armenia have now banded together in an international arena by blocking Turkey from leading the UN General Assembly. I don't know if you heard about this story or not, but there's a greater regional bloc now starting to face off against Turkish enmity. How is Turkey dealing with its Greek, Armenian, and Cypriot relations, three countries which have historical animosity towards Ankara?
Well, this is very interesting because Portsmouth Erdogan's imperial ambitions include commanding a great deal of the resources in the Eastern Mediterranean. And of course, includes Greece and Cypriot, and Turkey has never come to final grips with Armenia over the Armenian genocide in 1915 and those years following. So everything Mr. Erdogan does attracts opposition, and usually multiple opposition, and that's true for the Eastern Med and in other areas too. If you don't mind, I would like to say just a word about what I think the U.S. ought to be doing about
this. Sure.
The U.S. and Europe right now are the passive players with Libya, the Eastern Med, Turkey's ambitions, and they really can't afford to be. So if I were picking American policy, I would take Turkey's position to support the Libyan government in Tripoli, and I would work with Turkey on that question. I would make it clear to Turkey on the question of control of economic resources and its aggressive political campaigns in the Middle East as the one in which we oppose them. So Turkey talks about how it wants to be independent of any decision process that the U.S. makes, and I think we ought to turn that into an asset and make ourselves an independent actor with respect to Turkey. So I would convene NATO, the EU, or a coalition, if that had to be the case, and say that there has to be a negotiated settlement in Libya. That's first point. Second point, no permanent Russian presence in Libya, full stop. And third point, the Eastern Med and control of economic resources have to be negotiated fairly. And I would make the U.S. and Europe the conveners and get back at the table and assert some influence on this process instead of just standing by and watching right now. We are not doing anything more right now than doing what we did in Afghanistan, which is to say that all the parties should agree. Well, it didn't work too well in Afghanistan, and if we don't exert some influence in Libya, it may turn out to be the same sort of mess we have seen in Afghanistan.
And the European foreign policy establishment agrees with you. Josep Borrell, the EU's Minister for Foreign Affairs, was just quoted as saying in a meeting with the Greek and Cypriot foreign ministers, he said, "We are in close contact with our colleagues in order to monitor the state of drilling and call on Turkey to stop drilling in areas where there is an exclusive economic zone or territorial waters of Cyprus and Greece," talking about the recent mad rush for Eastern Mediterranean natural gas. More than that,
right?
Cyprus's president Nikos Anastasiades, that's me and my Greek pronunciation, we could do Hebrew, but I have to work on that, said that if Turkey did not end its aggression in the Eastern Mediterranean, it should no longer be an EU candidate. So Turkey has what to lose, not just what to gain with this efforts. Any final thoughts on not just U.S. policy, but what's going to happen in the next few weeks with all these different Turkish incursions?
You know, we're too close to the platform to see what might happen, to be honest with you. So I wouldn't try to guess and certainly wouldn't try to predict. But longer term, Turkey under Mr. Erdogan is going to continue to have politically aggressive steps in the region surrounding it, and even military steps. It has bases now in Somalia on the Indian Ocean, a base in Sudan on the Red Sea, a base in Qatar on the Persian Gulf, and now claims for the Eastern Med. So Turkey is building a military presence on every important waterway in the Middle East, and it is the only country with that presence, even in a minor way today. So expect more of this, but keep in mind that Turkey has often been unsuccessful in actually carrying this out. And if the Turks go too far in Libya, there'll be a very sharp reaction, and it will actually enhance a Russian presence, something we Americans certainly do not support or want.
Ambassador Robert Pearson, thank you for joining us this morning, and we hope to have you back soon.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. After these